guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with singer-songwriter Rome Ramirez from Sublime, as well as his solo work. In our conversation, Rome talks about growing up in Fremont, California, and living now in Nashville, and he walks us through his early musical journey. Rome discusses enrolling in Musicians Institute, only to leave after a short while to do studio work in Orange County. Rome talks about a song he wrote for the Dirty Heads, Lay Me Down, and how that song changed his trajectory and eventually had him playing guitar and singing with the band Sublime. Rome discusses how he moved on from Sublime and decided to go solo, and he talks about writing songs for Enrique Iglesias and Selena Gomez. Rome tells us about his band and his solo album that is being produced by Dan Huff and will be out in early 2026. Rome talks gears, his guitars now, and with Sublime, and his home studio outside of Nashville. To find out more about Rome, you can go to his website, romeramirez.com. That's romeramirez.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy Rome.
Hey there, Romy. How are you?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good. Nice to see you. Nice to speak with you.
Likewise. Likewise, James.
And so you grew up in Fremont?
Yes, sir.
Right on. Were you playing music as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Very early on. Probably since the age of 12.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Napa right now. Are you in L.A.?
Oh, beautiful. I live in Nashville, actually.
Do you really?
I just got home last night, like midnight.
Oh, my God. And why Nashville? I mean, it's Music City, but.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter, and it was just, I've always been coming out here writing songs and stuff, and okay. it's just so beautiful,
yeah.
Like, the flora and fauna of the city, you know, oh, yeah. and all the surrounding places.
Sure.
Yeah, my wife and I just fell in love with it in the community.
Yeah. And you live in Nashville proper, or Franklin, or...
Nashville proper, yeah. All but right. I mean, we can throw like a football over to Franklin, you know. But yeah,
right on. And so, were you playing music in high school and stuff when you were in Fremont?
Yeah, man. But pretty much like the earliest rock and roll memory I can like even think of is just like my dad waking me up at like 3 a.m. because Jimi Hendrix was on VH1 doing the like Monterey,
sure,
live
sure.
in Monterey, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just started playing guitar at this point, and you know, my dad was just like, you got to watch this. And
yeah.
and so from like then on, man, it was like a bug. And yeah, man, I actually started on electric guitar first.
Yeah,
I didn't
really?
Get my first acoustic until probably till the end of high school. But
uh-huh.
yeah, man, I was in and out of bands. And once I got into songwriting, I chilled out on wanting to be like Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, wanted to be more like, you know, Van Morrison or something.
Oh, yeah, of course. And so were you in bands in high school? Were you playing in the band, or were you playing like, you know, like with local people and clubs and stuff?
Yeah, dude, like any and all iterations that you can think of.
Okay.
Like I'd start my own bands and they would fall apart because no one wanted it. Like no one wanted to jam the way I wanted to jam.
Sure,
like
sure.
I was like, soon as dudes in band practice would start talking about like their college plans, I'd be like, what do you mean college, dude? I thought we were going to like, you know, do this for real. So like, you know, I was always starting bands and, you know, I would respond to Craigslist ads for people who needed singers or even
yeah.
guitar players or bass players or whatever. I just wanted to be in a band. So yeah, we were playing clubs and YMCAs and coffee shops. And
sure.
eventually I kind of figured out that, like, you know, if I just became a solo artist, I wouldn't really have to depend on a lot of people and I could just show up to a place and just get going, you
oh,
know?
Yeah.
So
yeah. So you just show up with an acoustic and do your thing. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I show up with an acoustic and, you know, they have like those double guitar cases. So I'd put like an acoustic in one, an electric in one.
Okay.
And I would just bring like a twin and, you know, cause there's some songs where I'd like to hit the reverb.
Amp.
Oh yeah, dude. But I used to live in my Chevy G20 like conversion van. Yeah. I used to live in that thing. So I would just, I mean, I had everything I needed in there, you know,
mm-hmm.
amps, like a longboard, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. So yeah, man, I would just be able to pull up and my whole philosophy was just be able to play shows anywhere, you know, even if it was a street corner, you know.
I mean, there's not a lot of busking in Fremont, though, but
I made it happen.
Yeah. Do you remember the venues you played?
Like in Fremont? Not so much. Well, in Fremont, I used to play Suju's Coffee, which is now, I think, was purchased by Starbucks.
Yeah, of course.
But it used to be really cool. They used to do hardcore shows there. They used to have, like, you know, like, emo was really big when I was a kid. Uh-huh. It wasn't really my thing. But they would do these acoustic nights and open mic nights, too. Okay. So I used to play Suju's a lot. There was Bay Street Cafe, which I used to play regularly all the time. But I go to Berkeley a lot and then go play, you know, a couple places on Telegraph. And then Cactus Club in San Jose, which ended up selling. Uh-huh. Just, you know, pretty much any place. There was, like, you know, local fairs and stuff that I'd go jam at and play in front of, like, two people.
There.
It's good times.
And so you made the move to LA, right?
Yeah, man. I eventually got kind of locked in where I was, and, you know, I felt like I had done and probably met anybody who ever played an instrument, you know, who was under the age of 40.
Yeah.
I jammed with them already. So I figured it was time to go down south, you know, and a lot of my friends, and especially, like, my mom, she was really, like, supportive of that. They were like, dude, you got to go down there, like, you know, you got what it takes, all that stuff. And and I listened to them, you know. That support really did help me. And
sure
So I went down there almost foolishly, you know. I was thinking I could just go down there and, like, make it in the music industry, but I went down there and I saved up some money to enroll at this school called Musicians Institute.
Sure.
And I was gonna, like, my whole plan was to go down there and be like and learn how to, like, be an audio engineer. Okay. I'd already learned, like, how to, like, self-record and stuff, but you know, I thought I'd get, like, a Pro Tools certificate and then, like, get an internship at a studio and then brick by brick, right, all the way up.
What year is this?
This was 2007, 2006. Okay. Yeah. Right around there.
Okay, but hold on, let me interrupt you just for a second.
Oh, yeah, please.
So I think Expression in Emeryville started in, like, 2004. Do you know about Expression?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Great school.
So why not go there?
Because I wanted to go to Hollywood, man. Okay. Right. Like, I wasn't even supposed to go there. Like, I just went because one of my friends was going to go. His mom was going to pay for him to go to the school, and it was in Hollywood, and I'd never been to Hollywood before. Yeah. So he was like, hey, do you want to roll with me to this thing? I'm just going to drive down, and we're going to do a tour of the campus. And I was like, hell yeah. So, you know, I mean, at this point, I'd only been in, like, one professional studio. Like, I'd never seen an SSL console, you know? Yeah. Like, so, like, I was just down for the ride, you know? And man, after walking the campus and seeing the studio and, like, just seeing the Capitol Records building and the stars on the ground and the homes in the hills, I was like, maybe this is achievable. Like, I walked out of there more inspired to go to the school than he did, you know? So, and he didn't even end up going. It was just me. I ended up going on my own and figuring it out. You know, I took a big fat loan that they gave up. I was 17-year-old, and that was not a good idea. But it worked out. But I really wanted to jump down into LA just because I was just so burnt out on the Bay, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. When you went to MI, were you taking, you know, were you learning guitar as well, or just, it was just all about recording?
It was all about recording, but I only went there for about 3 weeks. shortly thereafter, I was introduced to a recording engineer in Orange County, and he was, he owned a studio, and he like had worked with the band Sublime, and they were, like, my favorite band.
Yeah, of course.
So, like, there was, like, some serendipity going on, and, you know, he had heard my music, and he was just, like, willing to develop me and record me in his studio. And we did one demo together, and I came back to MI, and I'd showed all my friends and my instructors, and they were like, dude, this is, like, pro. Like, this sounds really good, you know? So, like, you know, I think I kind of took that maybe as a sign, too, that I'm in the right place. And so I just stopped going to that school and just started living at that studio and recording every single day. And eventually, like, the engineer over there, his name was Lewis Richards, he was just like, hey, man, tell you what, if you want to, like, move into the studio, you could like sleep in one of these vocal booths and go between your van and the vocal booth. And if you help me run the studio every day, like you could just, we can do this every day, all day long, you know? And like, she's like, just help me get clients to kind of keep the bills up. But like, we could do you all day long. And so I was like, hell yeah, this is like, cause he was working with my soon to be manager. But so I was like super stoked that like, you know, this is like, I'm in the right place at the right time. Felt serendipitous. There was a big old Sublime plaque on the wall every time you walked in. So I was like, okay. And,
had he been working with Sublime?
He helped out on their big debut record. Okay. He was the assistant engineer on that record.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I went back to my school. This was probably like a month in to like, you know, going there. And I was like, you guys, I talked to my counselor. I was like, you guys, you're going to love this. I think like I like found a producer who's going to like develop me and like maybe get a record deal. So can I get my money back so I can go like live? And they were like, hell no. Yeah. So I basically just had to like give him that money and yeah.
And how's your mom feel about that?
Well, I mean, she bless her heart, man. She always just kind of trusts me. She I don't come from the entertainment industry at all.
Yeah.
And my parents are very blue collar, and you know they work with their hands. And so,
what do your parents do?
My dad for the longest time he worked for a newspaper plant. He was like a technician for the newspaper machines, but you know that all went to computers, so he got laid off, and he became a truck driver.
Okay.
And then my mom just kind of did various things as well.
Yeah.
Shortly after I you know started hanging around that studio, I wrote a song, and that went number one, and I got some money, and I was able to retire my mom. So
that
was like that was pretty cool.
Yeah. What was the song that you wrote?
Lay Me Down.
Oh, okay.
For a band called the Dirty Heads. Yeah, that was like the, that like changed my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, just when I was like, man, maybe I should think of a backup plan here. that song just took off.
Yeah. Had you been writing songs like when you were a kid and stuff?
Yeah, I started writing songs when I was about probably 14.
Okay.
That's when I really started. Really started like, just start singing. I started singing at 14, and you know, trying to write. And then I like started like really writing songs like around 16, 17 years old.
Okay, all right.
And then after I got a publishing deal, I spent like so much time in LA, like you know, just working with so many talented people.
Yeah.
And just you know, learning so much, and. That's when I like my brain turned, you know.
How did you get a publishing deal though? By working at that studio?
No, through Lay Me Down. Yeah. Oh, once you write a hit, they all come. You know how that goes, you know. Trying to get someone to believe in something beforehand is very hard.
But yes.
Oh, well, you know, it's the music industry especially now is very like Shark Tank.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have it pretty much all chiseled out.
Yeah.
And then you go to them and then, you know, they go, okay, we'll sprinkle this with cash and let it grow. But you got to build it, you know, and yeah. So I was very fortunate that song took off because then I got put in a place where, you know, people wanted to hear my stuff.
So you're living in the studio. For one thing, like every time I've been in a vocal booth, I've always thought, this would be a great place to sleep because it is fucking quiet.
Yeah, and cold. Yeah.
Was it a good place to sleep?
Oh yeah, man. I'd throw like four comforters down and like two pillows and again, like my van was just parked like right outside of the parking lot.
Okay.
So if it was too loud or whatever, like I would go in there. If it got too stuffy in my van, I would go down. The good thing is like the studio was only about a mile from the beach, so we got some good breeze going on and stuff.
What city?
It was in Costa Mesa.
Oh, Costa Mesa. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. 17th Street Studios. All that's what it's called.
Right on.
Yeah. It's still there. Lou's still rocking. He's a good man.
Right on. So, how do you make the transition to be actually being in Sublime?
Being at that studio, the bass player would frequent very often, and I got to know Eric on just like a friend level, you know?
Yep.
He knew I was a super fan, but I never bugged him for a picture or nothing. Yeah. You know, I kept my cool, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd throw these rad parties and I would, I'd show up to the parties. He'd invite me to them and, you know, he'd always have music playing. Like his band was always playing. He used to be in a Stooges cover band.
Okay.
So, yeah, there was always instruments going, and, you know, inevitably at some point in the night, somebody would be like, play Sublime song, yeah, you know? Yeah. And, you know, he knew that I was a fan, so he'd ask me to go up there and sing them, and right, you know, I knew them all, so he could say any one of them, and I would be able to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, we just did that for a while, and then word caught around eventually, and so, like, the producer who worked at that studio, like, the guy who owned that building,
yeah, yeah,
He was also managing another band called was managing a band called the Dirty Heads.
Okay.
And that's how I, like, kind of connected with them.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, he had just reunited Rage Against the Machine for a reunion.
Wow.
So Eric and him connected, bass player to Sublime, and, you know, Eric was thinking about maybe a reunion.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he'd been jamming with me.
Yeah.
And our soon to be manager kind of figured it all out. His name is Cheese. He kind of figured it all out, and things took off pretty fast from there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, before long we were like playing, you know, trying to like, you know, in amphitheaters and arenas, you know.
Yeah. And so how did you guys come up? I'm sure they wanted to define it from the original Sublime, and so they made it Sublime with Romy, but did you have a hand in that?
Oh no, I was like, what was I, 17 or 18 at the time? I was like, just, you know, writing songs on the beach, uh-huh, drinking, yeah, smoking, like, but, you know, we had attorneys and stuff, you know, I'm sure I had the emails, but, you know, it's like, when you're just a kid, you're just kind of like, you guys figure that shit out, yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. I write the song. Yeah. Now, as a grown ass man, I would be like, okay, I'll be on that call. I'll be on that, you know. But nah, they kind of figured it out, you know. It's always just kind of like a numbers thing, you know. So they were just kind of figuring out who's gonna get what, when, and where. And I think once it all made sense, yeah, they started selling some tickets.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get to your band now, so why did it separate?
Honestly, man, we kind of all got to the place, I feel like, where the next creative force needed to happen. For me, I just started writing these songs during the pandemic. That was the only time that Sublime with Rome had ever took the foot off the gas, for lack of better words,
yeah,
since our formation in 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, it been at that point like a solid 11 years of, yeah, like boom, 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 boom. And, you know, in all that time, you know, I was like writing records for artists and stuff. You know? So I had this time off where it was like, well, what would I write for myself? You know, like, I don't know if it's ever going to come out. I don't know if I got to get a job at Best Buy tomorrow. Like, you know, like, we didn't know anything. It was such a time of uncertainty.
Yeah.
So I just started writing songs that I just loved in my head, that I heard in my head.
Sure.
And it was an amalgamation of everything that I grew up on, ironically. I feel like the older you get, the more you kind of circle back to what was playing in the house. And it was a lot of Motown and a lot of soul and blues and rock and roll. And so that's like, you know, where I naturally sort of gravitated towards when it came to original composition.
Yeah. So
eventually, like, that I couldn't really ignore that sort of wanting to put it out.
Yeah.
Because the world opened up, as we all know, and Sublime with Rome went right back to business, and we had two tours scheduled out. And I mean, it started to sort of feel like, you know, like maybe I was just kind of doing this thing for not the best intentions, you know, like, because my heart was somewhere else. And I'd never been at that point with Sublime with Rome. And, you know, there were some internal things going on that sort of inspired that. And I think it's just kind of got to a point where I'm like, I need to make the jump to the art that I believe in the most, you know? Yeah.
And not to get too personal financially, but like when you write Lay Me Down for the Dirty Heads, or you work with Enrique Iglesias, which is a bigger check?
Well, you know, it all depends, because some songs do different things. Like, the song that's done the biggest for me is with None of Them. It's with the kid who was in a song in a movie that went crazy. And then it was in a TikTok trend and went crazy platinum because it was in like a million bajillion TikToks.
Okay.
But so like the thing with music is, obviously, the bigger the artist, the more fans they have, the more they listen, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're going to culturally last as long.
Yeah.
So, you know, That's why I'm always telling songwriters and up-and-coming producers, like, write the best song.
Oh, yeah.
Not the most today song or the most catchiest song, but just write the best song because the best shit lasts always. Like, you know, a great, well-written song, in my opinion, it's timeless, you know?
Oh, yeah. You got to write for you. You can't rewrite it.
Yeah, you know, can't be trying to write. I tried, you know, and you know, things went dry. And then as soon as I got back into my heart, things started working again, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so now you have your own band?
Yes, sir.
Like,
yeah, I have I carried the drummer over from Sublime with Rome and my amazing horn player and keyboard player. And then I have a project with Duddy from the Dirty Heads.
Okay.
It's like an Americana Island project. And we have a pedal steel player in that. So I brought my pedal steel player, Jeremy Long, into the band.
Uh-huh.
And then my bass player, Adam Ditt. And I mean, we're just like a family, man. I've been jamming with these guys for years. So, you know, now it's just kind of like introducing new elements and tying it in different communities. You know, I jam with these guys over here and these guys over here. And now we're like jamming together. You know?
All right on.
Right, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And so, excuse my ignorance, but do you have an album out already, or is it on its way?
So we just put an EP out in September.
Okay.
And then we are recording the rest of the album in a couple weeks.
Okay.
And then that should be out in the first quarter of 2026.
Yeah. And with your with your studio background, are you the producer? Or do you
Man, I'm actually been working with legendary Dan Huff.
Oh, no way.
Dude, yeah, he's pretty much like my guy. Like, I write songs.
And a fellow LA person just like yourself.
Uh-huh, yeah, but he's out here in Nashville crushing shit,
you know.
He's a monster producer. He's just got a killer ear, and you know, he appreciates the, you know, the instrumentation and the guitar the way I do,
and a great
guitar player, too. Fantastic, and his collection is crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of the most freaking awesome guitars I've ever seen. You know, But it's awesome. I'm in a really awesome place. I usually self-produce, but with this, you know, I really wanted to kind of just focus on the writing, and you know, kind of give that sort of vision making. And I'm also right there with Dan, kind of going everything. But. You know, he has such a wonderful ear and attention to detail.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can just arrange a song like no one's business.
Yeah. What studio are you working at?
For the EP, we recorded it at Castle Studios in Franklin, Tennessee, a really legendary spot. And now that my studio is finished in Leaper's Fork, we're recording out there.
Okay.
At LaGrange Studios.
Right on. Right on.
Yeah.
That's badass. So you mentioned Dan's guitar collection. How about your guitar collection? What's that look like?
Man, okay, so I'm not like a dude who's got like 100 guitars,
that's,
you know.
Okay.
I got like my you know, tried and true, you know, one of my all-time favorite guitar is, so when I met Sublime, when I met Eric from Sublime, I didn't have an electric. I had like pawned everything. Like I was telling you, I was living in my van.
Yeah, yeah.
And all I kept, I had an electric and a bass and an acoustic, and I pawned the electric and I pawned the bass.
Oh, okay.
And all I had was my acoustic. So Eric had this really, really rad, it's a Mexican made 1996, just Strats, like American player, you know, nothing crazy, but it was just broken in already. At this point, it had already been 13 years old. And it coming from him, man, it just meant so much to me, still does.
Sure.
And, you know, that was like my baby. Like, that was like my first electric. And honestly, like, if you look up any picture of me online, like, that was typically the guitar.
Okay.
I retired it at some point because I lost it in an airport in Philly. And I almost like shit myself. I was so scared, bro.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it back for like 2 months. And it was a whole thing. But so once I got it back, I was like, okay, you're staying in the studio.
Yeah.
But you know, that and when news first started to kind of break that I was going to be playing with Sublime, there was this really killer acoustic guitar company that I always had my eyes on, and because I'm a big fan of Jack Johnson, and he exclusively used this company called Cole Clark.
Okay.
And I just love the way, like, you know, like their the body of the guitars, they resonated just so deeply. And I felt like, you know, I kind of had like a lower timbre voice similar to his. So I was like, you know, that's my guitar. And wild shot in the dark, you know, I was like, send an email out. You know, I did it myself. I was like, hey, looks like I may be singing with Sublime. I'm not sure. Please don't tell anyone. But I really love your guitars. And if like you could send me one, I promise I'll like take a, like a bunch of pictures with it and send it to you. And, dude, they reached out back to me they were like, I swear to God, dude, they said, pick any guitar you want.
Wow.
Any guitar. So naturally, I just went to like the most expensive acoustic that I could find. And they were like, cool. We sent you a Strat too. And dude, that was like, oh dude, I opened that thing up. And so it's a Cole Clark. It's called a Fat Lady.
Okay.
I think it's a 3121C or something like that. It's a beautiful, beautiful guitar. Inlays all over the place. I've had that my whole life. And yeah, definitely one of my favorites. But yeah, man, you know, I'll tell you who's got the coolest guitar in the whole world is my wife, dude. Because my father-in-law collects, and he's got like one of the very first country and western, if not the very first country western Gibson acoustic guitars, like a 1959. It was it's basically like a flat top J45, but you know, this one was made yellow. So it would look good on TV.
Yeah.
You know, shine a little brighter.
Yeah.
And it was gifted to my father-in-law's grandfather. And when he died, he basically died with like some wood tools and that guitar, and left it to him. And he gave it to my wife. And so we record with that very often. You know, we got a really rad like Larry Carlton 335. That thing's dope. It's like a 62.
Yeah.
We got a couple 335s. We got this is all like in my studio. So I when people come over, they can grab for anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We got like a Rusty Anderson 335.
Yeah.
That thing is bad right there, man. Yeah, just sold for days on that. But yeah, you know, we got some cool shit in there.
Right.
My manager's got like, you know, Slash did his replica model with Gibson back in like, what is it, 2001, 2002, something like that.
Sure.
So you know how they make like the artist prototypes, right? The ones that they like send to like Slash to be like, what do you think, boss? Is it good for production?
Yeah.
My manager's got prototype one, number 001. Just straight from Slash, and he signed it. So yeah, we jam on that thing too. But yeah, you know, I like to keep, you know, a nice little steady roster of guitars just to kind of cover all grounds, you know.
How about
Gibsons and Tellys? Oh man, we got some Divided by 13s. Big shout out to Fred. Yeah. You know, that's like, I've been using Divided by 13s my whole entire professional career.
Oh, have you really? All right.
Man. Like, just, we know Fred very, very well.
Okay.
You know, he's a wonderful man. He just sold his company, you know, which is awesome. I'm sure it's in great hands now.
Yeah.
But so we use a lot of Divided by 13s in the studio. We got some killer old vintage, you know, Marshalls, some old Plexis. And man, I got actually the Marshall that I love the most. Like, if you're looking for that sort of like, you know, New York Dolls, sort of like, you know, that bright killer crunch.
Yeah.
Fred from Divided by 13, he came across this JCM 800. It's like a 82 or 81. and Fred came across it and called up my manager and was like, dude, I'm sitting in front of one of the, if not the greatest JCM 800 that I've ever heard in my entire life. Wow. He's like, I got more than I know what to do with. And somebody painted it white. So that sucks. And my manager's like, oh, I have a couple too. Let me call Rome. And they called, this was like 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And they called me and I was like, dude, Fred, if you're saying it's fire, I'll buy it right now. I don't give a shit if it's hot pink. I'll put that in the studio. We'll use it. So yeah, man, we got a couple ones. And then, you know, the trusted, you know, Defender Champ. And
sure. Yeah.
Couple really good twins, you know, Blackface.
So once you get the album recorded, is your plan to go out and like tour?
Oh yes, yeah, sir. Yeah, I take off in a couple of weeks for a big East Coast run.
Oh wow!
Got about 15 to 20 dates, and then we're chilling, and then going to Mexico at the end of the year.
Wow!
And then next year we're hitting it hard. We got some festivals, and we're putting together a killer summer package right now. And,
sure.
Yeah.
So when you say you're going to Mexico, you're going to Mexico to play?
Yeah, we're playing a festival out there called okay. Closer to the Sun.
Do you have any reservations about going to Mexico?
Oh, no, never. I go to Mexico like every year.
Okay.
I mean, I'm Mexican, so
no,
like,
I know that.
Know,
I got
they don't
that.
Fuck with me. You know what I mean? I go there and I'm like, ¿Qué pasó, primo?
No, I know, but just because you know we hear that. You know, I have been to Mexico in a long time, but when I went to Mexico, it was like, you know, we're going surfing and we're going to go down the coast and just keep going. But now that, you know, you hear about all these stories, like the surfers that got killed and right out of Ensenada.
Yeah. I mean, that shit, you know, that sucks. That incident super sucks. But you know, I look at, because my job is to go to places, and oftentimes, depending on what's going on in the world, it just rotates like the hot spot of shit, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the way I see it is like, it's, you know, it's kind of like going to Chicago or like going to Oakland. Like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
There's some places where you probably wouldn't go. We wouldn't go by yourself or at certain times. And then there's some places where, you know, you're like, man, I'm free as hell right now. Yeah. You know, I could, you know, so... It's like that pretty much everywhere, and in Mexico, you know, the also from what I understand, you know, the cartel makes a lot of its money also from the tourism.
Oh, really?
So they typically don't shit where they eat, you know, but shit happens.
For what it's worth, I would go to Mexico before I went to Oakland.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea.
So. You do all this stuff. You make all this music and stuff. What do you do for fun?
Hang out with my kids.
Okay.
Yeah. I love them to death. I have 3 kids.
Okay.
I have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old,
oh, right,
and a 4-year-old girl. Well,
that's great age.
And they're all beautifully talented in their own right.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, you know, this is a lot of like living a life of music is a tremendous amount of fun. Like,
sure, sure.
I love this shit. Like, this is like what I do every day. I just go back there, write songs, and hope the world likes them, and then go play them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when my kids get a little older, you know, I'll probably like get back into like video games or some shit. I don't know, golfing or, you know, I like to hunt, you know, doing something like that. But right now, I just want to spend any like waking minute, if I'm not doing like what I love to do, like I want to spend it with the people I love, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever go down, you know, I mean, do you ever like have the inclination to like go to, I mean, it's Nashville. So like even the McDonald's has people like, you know, busking and stuff like that. Do you ever like go out and just bus for the hell of it?
You know, I haven't, not out here in town. I probably should. That'd be a really cool video. So if I do it, I'll give you credit for it. But I mean, I do that shit like random ass places, wherever we're at, you know, I'll jump up on the stage, you know, and just kind of play a couple songs. And it's awesome when no one knows where the hell you are, you know, because you could just kind
of,
you get
so
the real honest
so
truth.
So out of context for them.
Yeah, it's and for myself, you know, it's humbling because people, they don't care.
Nope.
So, you know, it's that's cool. You know, I like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have the voice and you have the song. So that gives
you
a big leg up over 99% of the people.
Thank you.
Well, it's been an honor to speak with you. I really appreciate your time. And it's, you know, it's great to meet somebody from the Bay.
Heck yeah. Oh, where are you from again? Napa?
I'm from Napa, yeah.
Oh, killer, man. Yeah, I love it up there, man. Beautiful, beautiful place.
I grew up in, you know, Concord and that area, but just, you know, a short BART ride away from Fremont.
Oh, dude, of course, man. I don't know why anyone would want to BART to Fremont. We usually BART out, but hopefully it's getting better. Well, thanks for taking the time and talking, James.
Oh, yeah,
appreciate
absolutely.
It,
my pleasure. Nice to speak with you. I hope I get an opportunity to meet you in person if you ever come out this way.
Yeah, I think we're planning to run over there, probably play like Sacramento or something like that. So we'll keep you in the loop.
Right on. Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.
Mm-hmm.